Hello and welcome to Launch. We're broadcasting live from Atlanta, Georgia. I'm Ron Reardon. My co-host is Bill McHenry. Bill, how are you doing today?
Just terrific, Ron. I am trying to stay warm in this cold weather, though.
I understand that. Everybody's bundled up everywhere you look. Well, you know, Bill, on Launch, we focus on the launching of a business, which can be pretty scary, but that's the whole reason for their show, is that we want our entrepreneurs to successfully navigate their launch by listening to people that have been through it. This morning, we're featuring Derek Gable of West Coast Innovations. But before we get started, Bill, could you thank today's sponsor?
I sure will, Ron. Our sponsor today is Entrepreneur Sales and Marketing. Entrepreneur Sales and Marketing is your one-stop source for all your marketing, sales, and business development needs. We customize and implement a business strategy to help build your business, grow your sales, and encourage your success.
And we really appreciate their support. Well, you know, Derek Gable has been a very successful inventor and product developer for over 40 years, and dozens of his creations have made it to the marketplace. Derek has approximately 60 patents in categories as diverse as toys, entertainment machines, games, medical devices, and systems for showing real estate. And he was really a significant part of the think tank at Mattel for over 16 years and responsible for either creating or managing many, many big hits like Masters of the Universe and items for Barbie, Hot Wheels, large promotional dolls, games, schools, preschool, etc. So welcome to the show, Derek.
Hi there. I'm glad to be on it.
Okay. Well, with all of your experience and everything, what's the most important thing to know as an inventor?
Well, that's interesting because most people don't know they're inventors. You know, you come at it from later in life when maybe you come up with an idea, and that was the same with me. I didn't start out as an inventor. I actually went to school to be an engineer and realized that I was fairly creative and that, in actual fact, I had been an inventor most of my life because as a kid I invented stuff. I made my own toys. I came up with gadgets and things to torment my parents and my cousins. And I thought, you know, basically, you know, you've got an inventor in the house. If they're always in trouble, they're probably an inventor. If they've taken every appliance to pieces and have no idea how to put it back together. So so basically, what the most important thing, I think, to know is that it's basically an attitude and it's a lifestyle. And it's part of being creative. It's just another form of creativity. You know, some people can paint and some people can write music or whatever, and being an inventor is another gift, and it's a way that you use that gift, I think, that it makes all the difference in the world. If the total focus is in making a fortune, then you're going to miss the point. Being an inventor is actually having the opportunity to think for yourself in all forms of your life, not just products, but actually in every aspect of your life, from how you handle it being a husband or a wife or a father. And we practice that with our family, and we've had a lot of fun with it.
Well, you just made me...
Derek, what do you think is your... Well, I was going to ask you what your best invention is, but maybe it'd be good to know what your best invention is and maybe the one that you're most proud of.
Well, you know, people do ask you that question, especially when you've actually had some success and you've had a lot of stuff on the marketplace. There's not really one answer to that, but the thing that I'm most proud of, which is probably, it's difficult to see it as an invention, but in many ways it is, that's the three kids I have. That's the thing that gives me the most joy, and you know, being a good dad and actually being an inventive dad and being able to give them the opportunity to start out in life with all the creative thoughts that go around in your head and no restrictions as to what they do, but actually to be able to look forward to making the most of their spirit, I think that was something I'm very proud of. As far as products are concerned, the product that I invented that did the most, you know, best for me financially was the real estate lockbox system. The system that I invented, the mechanical recording lockbox system before electronics, back in 1979, and created a company that had 80% of the business worldwide at one time. And that was very successful. That allowed me basically to leave Mattel, which was a great 16 years, but I was ready to do something different and experience the idea of being an entrepreneur and putting a company together and making money and having all of the headaches that go with that, but also the joy and the money that goes with it. So, you know, I was very much involved with Masters of the Universe at Mattel. Most people have heard of that. And that was my group that did that, and that was the first toy that ever became media. Up to then, it always worked the other way around. Either toys came from comic book characters or movie characters or somewhere like that. But in actual fact, Masters of the Universe and He-Man was a toy first, and then it became a movie, and it became multimedia cartoons and everything. And they launched that twice, but I think the first time alone it was over $1 billion of sales over a four-year period. So anyway, those are three things that come to mind.
Okay. Hey, I was thinking, you know, as you were talking, tell our listeners, Derek, what it was like going from the large corporate world to starting your own business. That must have been kind of scary.
Yes. In actual fact, it's interesting that I think you'll find if you ask people who are entrepreneurial whether their family was entrepreneurial, I think it's a very high percentage, maybe 80 or 90% of people who are successful entrepreneurs came from a family where one of the members of that family were entrepreneurial, because I think it's the idea of not leaving every morning and going somewhere where somebody calls the shots and gives you a paycheck at the end of the day. That's a big difference to actually calling your own shots and making all your own decisions and knowing whether you can survive that way. So entrepreneurs tend to come from entrepreneuring families. My father had his own business, so I had a little bit of an advantage there. And also, in some respects, I was kind of thrown into the deep end, because when I was at Mattel, we had some very successful products, but there was a big change. Mattel went through some very bad financial times. And there were some political things going on where they wanted to get rid of our department as a whole, which was the independent think tank, and they wanted to roll it over into the other company, into the main company, and the other departments. At that time, I'd already saw the writing on the wall, and I didn't want to be sort of part of that. So I was already thinking of things in the evenings that were non-conflicting with my contract with Mattel. And that's when I came up with the lockbox system. So I already had it going. At the time that I left Mattel, we were just on the brink of getting our first sale. So it was fairly easy transition, although my family, I must admit, were in a state of panic, you know, knowing not knowing whether I was going to be able to give them food and clothing. But I had three kids at the time. Yeah, actually, there was some really... It was the American dream, actually, followed by the American nightmare. When I left to do the lockbox system, we managed to get a sale from the San Fernando Valley, which was, and I'd never done anything like this before, so it was really exciting and scary all at the same time. We didn't actually have the product finished. We just had some plastic mock-ups, and I had a presentation that was made. It went back to the days when you stuck letters on pieces of cardboard. You know, it wasn't the PowerPoint and all the fancy stuff you can do now. It was all done by hand. And we made a presentation, and after about 4 hours of talking to the Board of Realty in San Fernando Valley, we came away with a $1 million order, myself and my partner. A little bit overwhelming, because we didn't really have the money or the resources to do this, but we scurried around, and it was 25,000 of these locks that were fairly sophisticated. It had 60 components in them, and they recorded the entry into the property on a Mylar film by perforating it with a binary code, if anybody knows what that is. And I didn't have any way to put them together. We got the tooling, we had some parts, so I had my children. We live in a pretty nice neighborhood up here, and I set up benches in my garage, and my kids and the neighborhood kids came down and built the first 25,000 of these locks in our garage. We probably could have been had for child labor. My daughter, I think, was like 11 at the time, and my twin sons were 8. And it was a riot. It was great. Everybody wanted to be part of it, because they actually got paid as little money too. So it was good fun.
And did you get a picture of the manufacturing facility?
You know something? I wish I'd taken more pictures. I have some pictures, but nowhere near. You know, when you go, when you're experiencing stuff during, yeah, and I recommend this to other people to think about this. When I was at Mattel, I invented all these incredibly fun toys. And at the time, they were new, so they didn't have much value, you know, and so you moved on to the next one. And I'm very often, and most times, actually, I didn't bother to keep a sample of them. So, you know, I've got all these things, probably hundreds of things that I invented at Mattel that actually got onto the marketplace, so I don't have samples of. And, in fact, my kids have been going onto eBay and trying to get them for me, so I've got a collection. But instead of, you know, $2.50, which they were at the time, now they're $250. But I'd recommend anybody that's involved with creating stuff to make sure they keep some of them for later on in life when you want to look back.
That's right. I just saw that one of the original Apple computers sold on eBay for quite a bit of money.
Yeah, a lot more than they paid for initially, I imagine.
That's right. Well, you know, thinking about that lockbox, you know, there's ideas and there's viable ideas and ideas that sell. You know, how do you know if you've got a viable idea like that lockbox?
That's a really good question because a lot of people who invent things obviously believe that they're viable right from the word go. And there's a lot of head in the sand stuff that goes on. In fact I get people call me up all the time and they say, yeah, I've got this $1 million, I got your name out of a book or whatever, and I got this $1 million idea and I want you to help me with it. And what I say to them, how do you know it's a $1 million idea? And the usual answer is, oh, all my friends and my family think it's absolutely incredible. Yeah, they love it. They say this is brilliant. And I say to them, well, you know something, it's a little bit like having a baby and bringing your baby back from the hospital. It could look like a monkey. Nobody's going to tell you that. So I said it's pretty valueless asking friends and neighbors to evaluate your idea. But here's a way to do it. If don't tell people that you invented something, but show them what it is you have and tell them that somebody brought it to you and they want you to invest some money in it. And see what they say then, because then they'll be protecting you. And if they think it's garbage, then they'll tell you that. Never admit that it's your idea. But you say, you know, hey, and the best thing is if they say, wow, yeah, that's really good. Do you think I could get a piece of it? Then you know you got something good. And then the other thing I do is ideas always tend to be really good you think they're really good when you first come up with them. But time will often sort it out for you. So I have a file with basically three compartments in it, and every time I have an idea, I scribble it down. I don't spend too much time on it, and I put it in the file. I put it in the front file, the A file, and then each week I'll look at the file and I'll get them all out and I'll see which ones still sound really good. If they feel really good and maybe even better than I did when I first thought of them, I'll put them back in the A file. Otherwise, I'll move them back to the B or the C file. And over a period of time, the best ideas will stay in that slot, and you'll keep on coming back to them, and you'll keep on loving it. And a lot of them that you thought were brilliant, you'll probably reject, and you won't look at again. The other thing that you can do is I kind of put together a form, which is a product evaluation form, and it forces you to think about all the things that you have to think about when you have an idea. Such as the manufacturability, the safety, the cost, what the target audience is. Is there a big target audience for this, or are there only three people on the planet who would be interested in it? How will you market it? How will you sell it? Is it something that's for the masses, or is it for a business? And if you go through all of that and you fill it out and you look at it, you'll see where the hurdles are, and you'll see whether it's something. You know, I think of this game as being like a steeplechase where you've got a bunch of horses running around on a track, and there's fences, and there's no point in having more fences that you can jump over, or if they're higher than your horse's legs. So you know, you've got to know when not to pursue something as much as you have to know when to pursue it. So that's kind of the way I do it, and it's just basically experience.
Wow. You know, Derek, when you think about your personal attributes, what kind of personal attributes do you think an entrepreneur needs to have to be successful?
Well, I think there's certain ones that will that you definitely need, and I would say stubbornness is definitely one of them. Because a lot of people can just be talked out of stuff, and a lot of times they should be. But sometimes you see, you know, I've tried to talk people out of stuff, and they've just kept on coming back, and a few of them have actually made a success of it, and I feel very proud that they did that. Of course, a lot of times they're just stubborn, and they shouldn't be doing it. But the other thing is you have to be thick-skinned, because you're going to be getting rejected all the time. Everywhere you go, rejection is part of the process. A lot of people get very emotional about that, and so I think it's wise, for instance, not to necessarily, if you have to, don't present your own stuff sometimes, because people won't tell you the truth about it because they don't want to hurt your feelings, and that's not what you want. You want the truth, because you can only really work with the truth. And then being tenacious. It's sort of similar to stubborn, but it's actually, stubborn is just being stubborn. Tenacious is actually doing something about it and getting on. And if you get stuck here, think of another way to do it. Think of another way to get the money to do it. Think of another, and keep on going with it until you're absolutely sure that it's not going to go anywhere. But the most important quality is to be lucky, because it all boils down to that. You're making sure that you're not at the airport when your ship comes in. You know, that's the whole key to this. There's so much luck involved, and some of the best ideas in the world, and I've got a few of them, they were just at the wrong time, showing to the wrong people. And if you're not lucky, it's very, very unlikely you'll be successful.
Well, you know, one of the objectives of having an invention is to, you know, make some money off of it. You know, what are some of the ways to actually make money with an invention?
Well, there are a number of ways that I've actually made money myself with them, but it depends on your resources and your connections and stuff. But there's sort of three basic ways. The first way is actually to take the whole thing to the marketplace yourself, which is exactly what I did with the lockboxes. We actually created a company, and we had 200 employees that manufactured these things, and we sold them worldwide. That's one way to do it. That requires money. That requires a lot of money, and you either have to, if you have, you know, yourself, you're fine, but if you don't, you have to raise it somehow. The second way is just to sell the idea outright, just to a third party who will buy it off you for cash, give you a lump sum, and you walk away from it. The way that I spend, you know, I put most of mine in the market these days, and I recommend it, is to actually license it to a third party, where they will do all the work, they will spend all the money, and if they're successful, they pay a royalty. And getting royalties for an invention is a very good thing, because basically it's considered long-term capital gain. So you have a really good incentive, a tax incentive to do that too. So as opposed to if you get income, you know, you're going to pay a lot more tax on it than if you can get a royalty. So that's a very good way to go, is actually to license it to a third party.
Hmm. What about protecting your idea, or Derek? What do you have to comment about that?
Well, I have a bunch of patents, but most of what I've done I haven't patented. I think the way to look at a patent, a patent is actually just one way to protect things. There are a number of other ways. Maybe I should list those first of all. The first and most crude way to do it, which I do this a lot because it just basically gives me a sort of a minimum amount of protection for a short period of time, and that's something called the provisional patent. And anybody can go onto the website for the U.S. Patent Office. It's USPTO.gov. And if you go on there, it gives you an infinite amount of information on how to protect things in terms of provisional patents, regular patents, design patents, trademarks and copyrights. Those are the basic forms of protecting different things. With a provisional patent, you basically, and by the way, I'm not a lawyer, so this isn't legal advice. This is just what I believe and what I do myself. But with a provisional patent, you define what your idea is, and you put it in, and it's filed away at the patent office. I think the filing fee right now is something like $110. And it's filed away, and you have 12 months to go back and apply for a real patent. And but during that period of time, you somewhat have the protection of that, you know, window, because if you go back and get a real patent, the date that you've got your filing accepted is the date that they will accept, you know, the patent runs from. So it gives you a year's grace to really find out whether you have something of value for $110 plus the cost of actually filing it, which is, you know, in the hundreds of dollars, maybe a couple of $300 versus thousands if you apply actually and get a patent itself. That's a provisional patent. Then there are two different types of patent. The utility patent, which is a patent based on the how something works. And that's the best kind of patent. It's a mechanism, a how that something actually operates, and could potentially give you some really good coverage. I had a very good patent on the lockbox system when I did it, and it was worth something. I think people don't realize that patents are, it's just a really a license to sue somebody. That's all it is. And whether you do patents or other types of protection, I always look at it as a business decision. There's no point in, to my mind, in patenting something that's not going to make any money, because if somebody does it after you've done it, and you, even if you have a patent on it, it's up to you to go after them, and you have to, the cost of litigating a patent, or even the cost of getting a lawyer to move forward it within the first place, unless they're prepared to do it on contingency, which they would only do if there was huge amounts of money to be made, can be expensive. And so you don't really want to spend money patenting something that you would never actually be able to exercise. I think having a provisional patent is a good idea, because I believe that you can use the words patent pending while you've got a provisional, and in some ways having a pending patent is more valuable to you than actually having one that is in public domain where people can look at it and figure ways around it. If it's pending, they really don't know what is at stake, and so it's a little bit more maybe of a risk. And then you've got the design patent, which is a design patent is how something looks. And really, in most cases, I don't see a great deal of value in design patents, unless it's something that, like a Barbie doll or something, where the design is really, really important. Because most times, I think people can change the design and it's still viable, and it wouldn't infringe the original design. But, you know, that's just the way I look at it. And then trademarks are, you know, things that like 3M, their logos, or, you know, Coca-Cola's logos and stuff like that. And then lastly, copyrights, which is basically the written word. So you can protect, you know, something you wrote, if you wrote a book or something like that, with a copyright.
Sure.
So I think that covers that.
Okay. Well, you know, you talked about the presentation you made with the lockbox that was pre-PowerPoint, and it was, you know, letters pasted on paper. How important is a good presentation?
I think it's really very important, because, you know, I'm often talking to kids, especially these days. They don't have great people skills. They spend a lot of time in front of computers, and they don't really know how to communicate very well. And I always say to them, you know, what's the point? If you've got some great idea, but you can't really communicate with people, and that you can't prove, you know, convince them that it's any good, you know, what's the point of having it? So I think the presentation is very important. And the way I always look at a presentation, most people want to tell people what they want to tell them. But what I always say to people is, if you're making a presentation, don't think about it from your point of view. Don't think about it from what you want to tell somebody. Tell them what it is they want to hear. What is it? Why should they listen to you? And I always start a presentation with the benefits to the person or the outfit that I'm presenting to. I don't even tell them what the idea is until I've got them wanting to listen to me. So I would come in and say, look, what I'm going to show you today is going to make you a fortune. It's going to give you a product that's incremental business to you. It's going to make you look really good in the public's eye. It's got a lot of good PR associated with it. Well, hopefully by then they're kind of wondering, wow, what is this? This sounds good. This is something we need. This is something we want. Rather than just pitching in immediately and telling them about the product, and they may not be listening. So there is a lot to how to do a good presentation and making it flow properly. And as I said earlier, I think it's very often a good idea to have a somebody who isn't the inventor do the presentation. Or if you do the presentation as an inventor, don't say you're the inventor. You know, like my outfit is West Coast Innovations, and I present as West Coast Innovations, whether it's my idea or one of the other associates that I have or anybody that I'm representing. I don't say who invented it. And the reason for that is that the people who are looking at it, just like the baby, the ugly baby syndrome, if they think it's your idea, they're going to be resistant to actually telling you what they think because they don't want to hurt your feelings. And what you really want is you want them to give you feedback as the way they see it, whether they're right or wrong, because that lets you fine-tune it for the next presentation. Or right. Maybe you can solve the problem. If they tell you what the real problem is, then you can maybe solve it. If they're just telling you something to make you feel good, then you're wasting your time because you have no idea of what to do next.
Yeah, you really want people to be honest. And of course, it's so important to really sell someone on what benefits of the solution is to the person you're calling on. At the end of the day, they could care less if you were successful or not. They want to be successful.
Exactly. It's all about them. And I think people, especially, you know, people that have invented things, they're so excited to tell people about their invention. They forget that that's really not what's going to move you to the next level. The next level is having somebody want to have what you've got. And there has to be some reason, something in it for them. What's in it for them? Mm-hmm. And that's really the focus.
Yeah.
And all your invention is a way to meet that end for them.
Yeah. And it may sound selfish, but that's just the way it is.
You have to be able to, you know, a lot of inventors are somewhat naive, and they're not really good business people. You know, it's a bit of a joke. A lot of people, you know, they think of inventors being some kind of kook tucked away in the garage, you know, and a lot of them are. So, and if that's what you are and that's who you are, there's nothing wrong with that. But make sure that you get yourself a good partner who can take you and your great ideas to the public to be able to put a good image on, to be able to do this part of it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't want to do that. They want to do it themselves, and they do themselves a disservice by doing that.
You know, Derek, tell us what the overall process of taking an idea from conception to money. Tell our listeners what that overall process is.
Okay, it's obviously going to vary depending on what the product, or, you know, when I say product, it doesn't have to be a solid product. It could be something that was written. It could be a book or whatever. Depending on what kind of product it is, that process will vary. But, of course, it always starts with an idea. And, one of the things I recommend, which I mentioned earlier, is the file. To make sure that you have a lot of ideas. If you're creative, have a lot of ideas. This whole thing, as I said earlier, is a lifestyle. It's a process, and also just to, you know, you have to realize that you don't have a lot of control over this. You know, because most of the time you're going to be, unless you've got lots of money, you're going to be asking other people to make decisions, and you have probably 10% control over the destiny. What you're going to do is you're going to put a piece together, starting with the idea, and then the next process would be to define that in some way where you can see whether it's viable or not. Do some drawings, some engineering if it's a product, see how it fleshes out, bounce it off some people. If you're not an engineer, get some engineering people to help you with it. Do a little market research, you know, get some people, let's say it was a kids product. You know, get a little group of moms together, and once again, don't say it's your idea, but just basically say that you're representing a company who's got this, and have a bunch of moms together and see what their feedback is. Get some feel as to whether it makes any sense and what it should cost, and that'll help with the design. Then you need some good artist renderings to show to see how it's going to look. And then basically to see how much it will cost, you need some engineering design done, which can be sent, you know, almost everything these days made in China. So you need a contact that will be able to take it over and get it costed for you to see whether it makes sense from a price point of view. excuse me. Then looking at the list of things that are that need to be to make have a viable product, things such as safety and everything. There's no point in coming if it's a product that's going to cause problems. No point in even if it's great fun. You know, you don't want to do something that's going nobody's going to take a chance on making or getting near because it's dangerous. So then once you've got that, defining, and of course any protection and preliminary protection, and then defining the marketplace. In actual fact, a lot of this I've worked backwards because some of the, my outfit, West Coast Innovations, myself, we invent to order. Somebody's got a need, we can invent something for that need. And independent inventors, I always tell them to think about the path of least resistance. In fact, a lot of times, I think it's best to invent for what you know. You know, what do you do? I always say to people, what's your work? What do you do? And you know that better than anybody else. And I say, think about during the day, what is it that frustrates you? What is it you say, wow, I wish there was something that would do this. I wish there was a way to fix this. And then, because you know how to get to those people. It all boils down in the end to being able to sell stuff. It doesn't matter what you have. You're either selling it to a third party that's going to take it to the marketplace, or you're selling it to that marketplace. There are very few ways to actually do that. It's all about communicating. And so it's best, I think, to invent things that need to be invented as opposed to just coming up with an idea and then trying to force it into the market or force it into a square peg into a round hole. A lot of people do that. The lockbox was particularly good because the marketing of it was directed to a small group of people, mainly the real estate boards and the multi-listing system. So we convinced, like for instance, the one we did with the San Fernando Valley, we had to convince 10 people that what we had was the best thing since sliced bread, and they made the decision for 10,000 people. Now, that's awesome. If you can find products like that, because most of the time you're having to convince people one at a time, and that can be expensive. So anyway, depending on how far along you get this, then you need to try to market it to a company that's going to do it. And then it's identifying who those companies are and then getting in the door. That's another difficult part of this process. If you're not a known quantity, if you're an amateur off the street, very often they won't open the door for you in the first place. So sometimes you have to get an agent or somebody who's already got credibility to take your idea to those outlets. And then negotiating, of course, if you get somebody of interest, negotiating a good contract where you get paid and you get it back if they don't do it, and all those, the finer points on the license, if you're going to license it. So it's a complicated process, but I always look at this whole thing. You know, I tell people, you know, this is just like going to Las Vegas with your time. If you go to Las Vegas to make money, two things don't happen. Number one, you don't make any money. And number two, you're miserable. And so if you have an idea and you say, I'm going to make $1 million on this, and that's the goal, then what happens is maybe you don't, and you miss the whole point, and that is the fun of actually doing it. So this is it's a terrific thing to be creative, and you've got to enjoy the process and the journey, not just the end result of making a lot of money. You can't base it on that. If you do, you won't have any fun, and you won't be any fun to be around either. So it's not a very simple answer to, because it's a complicated question.
So it sounds like the best thing about being an inventor is the fun and the journey.
Exactly. And I think that's, I think that's the thing about life, to be quite honest, is that, what I say to my kids and the kids that I mentor, and I mentor a lot of kids, is I say, the best thing, what you need to know about life is, and to have a good life, is to find out what it is you have a passion for. and then figure out a way to make a living at that, as opposed to most people, when you ask them, you say, well, what are you going to do? You're leaving college, you know, you're going to college. Well, I'm going to be a lawyer. Well, why are you going to be a lawyer? Well, they make a lot of money. And I say, you know something, it's not going to work. You know, there'll be a few years into it, and you'll hate it, and you won't be making much money, and you'll be miserable. I say, what you really, who are you? What is it that you love, you know? Most inventors, of course, are creative people. And it's getting that creativity in every aspect of your life, not just the money-making part of your life, but actually your family life and gift-giving. And, you know, I do a lot of lecturing on this stuff, and I've started doing it on cruise ships, which is a great deal of fun for me. But that's what I try to get people to see, is that their life is a series of memories that you live on when you're older. And if you don't create any great memories when you're young, what are you going to live on when you're older? So make life fun, you know, add creativity, add inventions to everything that you do. And it doesn't matter if you make money on them or not. It'll entertain you and your family and give you something to remember.
Mm-hmm. So do you think you can make a living being an inventor, Derek?
No, I don't think you can make a living being an inventor, but I think you can make a lot of money. But yeah, that's the difference, you see. I think of making a living is actually paying the bills. Unless you already have money, if you're rich, you can make a living being an inventor. But if you expect to, you know, I've had people, you know, a bunch of people call me up and, as I said before, ask me to help them. And the first things I say to them, I have two rules. Number one is I have to like you and I have to trust you, and you have to like and trust me, because life's too short. I don't want to be dealing with people I don't enjoy, and I don't have anything to do with lawyers at all, ever. And the second one is that you have to have a day job, because I've had people say, well, I've saved up, you know, $100,000 or something, and I've got this invention, and I'm going to quit my job and I'm going to make money with this invention. I say, don't do it, because it never works out the way you think. Just keep your day job. That's the way you make a living. You pay your bills, and you do the inventing on the side, and you do it with control. Because if you try to make money inventing something, you get more and more panicky, more and more anal as time goes by, and then you start making bad decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to have your life and your paying your bills under control. And then the inventing part of it, that's when you pull the handle and all this money comes out one day. But you cannot live off, you can't go to Vegas and make a living either. I guess there's a few people, you know, who can play poker and they'll make a living. But most of us can't, you know. Most of it is, you don't have enough control over it most of the time to make a solid living at it. But you can certainly make a fortune.
Sure. Yeah, they don't build those casinos in Vegas because they are losing money.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, there was a good movie. You know, there's some really good lessons. I don't know if you saw the movie about the windshield wipers. I think it's called A Flash of Genius or something like that.
Right.
Did you see that?
Yeah.
No, I didn't.
It's worth seeing. It because it tells a lot of story about inventors and the attitude I'm trying to get across. It's the guy who invented the intermittent windshield washer wiper. And he had it stolen from him. He spent his whole life going after them. And in the end, he won, and he won big. He won lots and lots of money. But he lost everything. He got all this money, but in the process, he was old. He lost his family, his children, everything. He gave up everything. And I say to my kids, watch this movie and realize there were many times during the process where he should have got out. He wouldn't have had billions of dollars or whatever he ended up with, but I think there was one offer he had $30 million or something like that, and he walked away from it because it wasn't enough. Mm-hmm. And I think the part of inventing in life is like that. You've got to know when to enjoy what you've got and not be unrealistic about stuff. You've got to. It's all part of the process. It's not part of. And being an inventor isn't just one thing. It's only part of who you are, and it's integrating it into your life.
Well, Derek, this has really been great. How can our listeners learn more about West Coast Innovations?
I don't have a website because I don't basically, there's no real reason for me to do that. But If people have an odd question or something, or they wanted to get a little bit more, I do have an email address and I'll answer some questions, and that is it's CaptainDerek.Gable. That's the Derek is D-E-R-E-K, so it's CaptainDerek@gmail.com.
Okay, that's super. Well, thanks for being on our show today, Derek. Our listeners really appreciate you sharing your experiences and insights.
Okay, well, thank you very much. It was a lot of fun, and wish you guys a lot of luck.
All right. Another great show, Bill.
Oh, it really was, Ron. And Derek and I have become friends over the last few months, and it's just he's just a great person and a lot of fun to listen to and talk to. I also want to give a special thanks to today's sponsor, Entrepreneur Sales and Marketing. We go the extra step so you don't have to fret. Visit our website at entrepreneursales.com.
And you can go to our blog at thelaunchhour.businessradiox.com to listen again to this show plus previous shows. This is Ron Reardon, Bill McHenry signing off another great session of The Launch Hour.